Niners Wire podcast. I'm Kyle Madsen, along with editor-in-chief Chris Biederman, along with Niners Wire contributors Rob Lauder and Vince Fasoni. We'll also be joined later by Matt Mayoko of CSN Bay Area. Hopefully we can stay strong through an entire podcast and not fade at the end like the 49ers did in their 46-27 loss at Carolina on Sunday.
Well, if we did play like the 49ers did, we would come back strong, like real strong towards the very end, and then just get crushed over the final few minutes. Basically, it was a game that kind of played out like we all thought it would, right? We all thought the Niners would play a little bit better, come out with a little bit better energy than they did typically in road games last year, but ultimately it just wasn't going to be enough. And I think we saw that. They played reasonably well in the first half. They made two pretty bad mistakes that ended up costing them two touchdowns in that first half when Carlos Hyde fumbled that led to the defensive touchdown for Carolina. And then Antoine Bethea got toasted by Greg Olsen for that 78-yard touchdown. Otherwise, you know, it was a game that the offense really struggled, particularly in the second half. The Niners couldn't run the ball. The running backs, Carlos Hyde and Sean Drone, averaged 2.4 yards per carry, which is not going to get it done. And given the way Chip Kelly has designed this offense, they're going to have to run the ball. Blaine Gabbert was not particularly good for any significant stretch of the game. He had some nice passes. The touchdown to Torrey Smith, 49ers' first touchdown of the game in the first half, was a good throw. That was a good drive. Sean Drone had a nice drive or a nice run in that drive. But overall, I would say it was just one of those games where the 49ers were outclassed. They made too many mistakes. They showed some fight. They took advantage of four Panthers turnovers, including just a horrendous effort by Ted Ginn on that kickoff that gave the 49ers a ball on the Panthers' 1 yard line, leading to that touchdown late. And the 49ers cut it to 7 late and then gave up 3 straight scoring drives. So overall, I don't know how many positive things you can really take away from the game other than the fact that they were able to fight back. You know, last year, if that team from last year got in that game, they probably would have given up 55 points and probably would have scored much fewer than 27. Whether or not that's a real positive takeaway from the game, I guess, is up to you. But I don't know. It was kind of what we expected.
I think what the 49ers showed in this game that it's going to be very difficult for them to make a comeback this season. This is probably as easy as it's going to get in terms of being gifted opportunities by the Panthers. The Panthers are one of the better teams in the league, but like you said, the Ginn fumble or the Ginn kickoff return and the Cam Newton fumble put them in a very good position to be competitive later in the game. And then you know, Gabbert also obviously followed with the interceptions, and so I think it's going to be a tough road as far as if we get down early in games.
It's tough to say anything positive about it. I mean, everything you say positive is like still sort of negative. But I think the biggest thing to take away from it is the 49ers played, and this still isn't really that positive, they played better than I thought they would, in the fact that I think probably half the league would lose to the Panthers around the same way or worse. The Panthers are just a really good football team. And the 49ers to even find a way to make it interesting is impressive compared to what, like you said, what they would have done last season. So, but you can't have a quarterback complete 47% of his passes, especially some of them that were wide open and, you know, would have continued drives and put them in scoring position. You can't expect a quarterback to play like that and have any real chance of winning, especially when it comes down to fourth quarter turnovers when you really need those, you know, those drives to happen. So his play, Gabbert's play, is what left the defense out on the field too long to get torched like they did.
Yeah, and I thought the defense played well for the most part of the first half. They were Keith Reeser dropped interception away from going into the half down 14-10. They give up the field goal at the end, and I think that was kind of where it felt like that game was going to get away a little bit. I know that sounds strange, but the offense just didn't show they were going to really do anything. And I think that was a deflating moment in the game when they could have gone into the half off the interception, and instead Carolina goes into the half up 7 instead of up 4.
Yeah, and then in the third quarter, I had mentioned to you guys earlier, there was the penalty that the TV broadcast didn't really give much attention to, but Keith Reeser with an illegal contact play on a third down where Jimmy Ward had tackled had tackled the ball carrier well short of the line of scrimmage. The Niners weren't going to get the ball back down a score early in the third quarter, and then it led to Kelvin Benjamin's long reception and then his 10-yard touchdown, which made it a two-score game, which really I thought was a turning point. If the 49ers had gotten that stop, they would have been down by 7 with the ball, with an opportunity to tie the game or at least, you know, make a drive to kick a field goal to put a little bit of pressure on Carolina. But ultimately, I mean, Cam Newton was, in the second half particularly, he was unreal. In the third quarter, he had a 155 rating. He completed, I think it was 9 of 10 with 2 touchdowns. 9 of 11, excuse me, with 2 touchdowns for 129 yards just in the third quarter alone. And that was when, you know, the Niners offense had a stretch over 6 possessions where they had 2 first downs from the second to third quarters. And it was just... it just wasn't going to be enough. Not against Newton. Not against, you know, Kelvin Benjamin. The way those two were connecting, those throws he made to Ted Ginn. That the one in the first quarter, that the one that was originally called the touchdown that was reviewed. That was just a ridiculous throw. And Tremaine Brock had really good coverage, and somehow Ginn was able to make that close. I didn't think there was any shot that would be even close to a completion. But you know, the Panthers were a couple inches away from that being a touchdown. And there was the other deep reception again that probably shouldn't have been a catch, but the NFL ruled it was a catch, or the referees ruled it was a catch, while the NFL still doesn't really know what a catch is. So it was a game. It was a game where the 49ers just didn't stack up from a talent perspective, and it's going to be tough to win. You know, people want to talk about excuses and there are no moral victories and all that, but you go play the NFC champions on a short week, who are well rested, who have the reigning MVP. It would have really been a miracle for them to pull that out, and so no one expected them to win. But there were certainly some points in that game where you can take some positives from. But for the most part, I think considering how well the opener went, I would have to say that game was pretty disappointing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at when a team as good as the Panthers gives you 4 turnovers and you still get beat 46-27. You know, that's 4 turnovers by one team in any game should result in a, you know, an easy victory. And the 49ers couldn't really capitalize on that, whether that was from turnovers themselves or from just an offense that didn't seem like it could really get moving too much. So Carolina gave the 49ers every chance to win, and they got close every now and then. But in the end, you know, losing by 19 points when you got 4 turnovers given to you is kind of an indicator of pretty poor play.
Yeah, and only one of their scores was organically without the turnovers. Their first 20 points were a product of those Carolina turnovers. It was a 75-yard Vance McDonald touchdown in the fourth quarter that ultimately was the only score the Niners had organically without a Carolina turnover. So they took advantage of their opportunities, but that was about it.
Cam kind of settled in there, you know, the returning MVP. All that stuff. But in the beginning of the game, it did look like, you know, he had that temperament that he gets, the kind of pouty, you know, body language going all over the place. And so I was kind of, you know, I was kind of like, wow, they scaring him here a little bit. But then once he kind of realized that he was not getting pressured whatsoever and the 49ers didn't have an answer for Kelvin Benjamin, and then Fozzie Whitaker stirring them up. So after that, he just kind of got into a rhythm and it was, you know, he looked like the MVP.
Can we get some positives? I have a couple of positives here, guys.
Go for it, Kyle.
Thanks. They weren't all the way boring to watch on Sunday. I feel like last year, the game against Pittsburgh in week 2 was like, I want to turn this off after 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, like I mentioned to you guys earlier, the fact that after that Vance McDonald touchdown, and you could hear through the television just how quiet that stadium was, then at least you know you had yourself a game. For that 30 seconds to a minute of football time, there was a game that could be, you know, could go either way. But that went away really quick when Carolina realized that the 49ers were actually within reach, and they kind of like put their foot back on the gas and did what they were doing the rest of the game.
Yeah, the way the Panthers kind of treated that game, you know, from a lack of focus perspective was kind of what I expected. And I was the idiot, you know, before the game, Saturday night before the game, who wrote a piece about it being a trap game and the 49ers having a chance because the Panthers are going to lack energy. And if, in fact, Chip Kelly was able to pull that win out it would have been similar to the week four win the 49ers had in Philadelphia in Jim Harbaugh's first year, or they're 10-point underdogs in that game. And I think you could, you know, I obviously wrote it. I thought you could make comparisons to that game for the 49ers this year. But obviously that's not how it turned out. And it was just a situation where the 49ers didn't have answers defensively. Their run fits against Fonzie Whitaker were terrible. Fonzie Whitaker ran for 100 yards. And, you know, if you were watching that game and you saw that Jonathan Stewart was going to leave early with an injury, you were thinking, wow, the 49ers could really have a chance in this one. But it seemed like the Panthers didn't take the game entirely seriously the way they were turning the ball over. There was a lot of lack of focus on their part, and I think the 49ers benefited from that. But if the Panthers had been playing at their best, it really would have been a much, much uglier game.
It's funny that you mentioned that Eagles game, because it was, in fact, Ted Ginn that put that game away for the 49ers. And then, you know, he kind of returned the favor on Sunday.
That's a good point.
Can I just, guys, I have some hardcore math here. You guys are welcome. I'm a comms major. The 49ers' first four scoring drives went for 59 total yards, and then Vance McDonald had the 75-yard touchdown. So I guess it's good that they took advantage of the turnovers, but it sure makes the 27 points deceptive.
So with that being said, is Vance McDonald the 49ers' offense?
That is a horrifying thought.
Yes.
And he did have another drop, even though it was a difficult catch. He did have another Vance McDonald drop to kind of remind us who he is.
Okay, but one thing, I think the biggest thing to come out of the game, because we all kind of expected it, we all kind of expected the 49ers not to win that game. So now you have Blaine Gabbert coming out with a bad performance. And at some point early in the season, it was pretty easy to predict that Gabbert would have a performance like this. And it wasn't as debilitating as last year in week three when Colin Kaepernick started that game against Arizona with two pick sixes. But I think it's interesting that, you know, we asked Chip Kelly today about what needs to improve in the pass game and specifically, you know, if Blaine Gabbert is still the starter or if it's still a competition at starting quarterback. And so Chip Kelly gave Gabbert the vote of confidence. He said, he's our starter. I've got a lot of confidence in Blaine. We're not thinking or talking about not having Blaine in there. It's about everybody on offense right now. And I think that's a fair statement when you look at how the game went. But I think the game underscored something that we all thought coming in, that Gabbert was going to have a short leash in the early part of the season, particularly with Colin Kaepernick as his backup. So with that, how much longer do you think the 49ers and Chip Kelly in particular is going to be willing to wait on Blaine Gabbert for him to get better? Because the 49ers go to Seattle and there's a good chance Sunday things aren't that much better for him.
Well, the interesting thing is, having been in the crowd for several home games going all the way back to the preseason, is I could very much see this crowd chanting for Kaepernick the same way they chanted for Carr back in the day when Alex Smith was playing terrible. I mean, you do have the kind of the X factor of the fact that a lot of the crowd doesn't appreciate his stand and his protest. I mean, that's just the reality of it, having heard how they react to him running on the field. But at the same time, being in the stands, you can feel the lack of patience for every little tiny mistake Gabbert makes. And some of these mistakes are throws that any quarterback would miss. You know, they're not, some of them are terrible, some of them are understandable. But every mistake he makes, you can feel the crowd like losing their patience. And while that shouldn't necessarily influence a front office or a coaching staff, it just seems like it's only a matter of time before they almost feel compelled to make the switch.
Yeah, I think next week is probably, unless he improves drastically, I think next week is probably the end of the line for Gabbert. Because given how good Seattle's defense is, they're going to be in Seattle. And if Gabbert's as bad as he's been, the 49ers probably aren't going to score unless they can generate a few turnovers again. But they're not going to be able to drive the length of the field and put points up against Seattle. And that the way Seattle's going offensively, that leads to the 49ers losing the game like 10-6. And I think after that, that's when it's going to kind of be okay, we've gotten 3 weeks. And if you look outside of 28 points week one against a bad Rams team, and then 27 points that were kind of fake 27 points, you got to look elsewhere. Because if you're looking at this season, if you're looking at 2016 as a season where you're going to try and go out and win, then you have to look for somebody else, because Gabbert's not going to be able to win football games.
Well, I think the interesting point, and Chris brought this up in our last episode, is you've got, you know, they've still got the Seahawks, Cowboys, and Cardinals, and I think that's a good three-game stretch to let Gabbert kind of really try to prove himself against a difficult team. And if he hasn't by then, you've got the Bills, Bucks, a bye week, and Saints. And that, to me, seems like somewhere in there is a perfect landing spot for Kaepernick, and giving him a kind of a confidence booster right out the gate if he can have a good game. And I think that's your sweet spot for somewhere in there in that three-week span when the 49ers might try and make a transition.
Well, and I think we saw that last year when they started Gabbert against Atlanta, against a soft Atlanta team. So that's a good point. I agree with that.
Yeah, and that game, if memory serves, it was right before their bye week, before they went to Seattle. So they do have a similar situation. And after that short week against Arizona on that Thursday night game, the Niners have a trip to Buffalo, and then they at home they come back to play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that could be a spot. I agree with you guys. I think that's going to be the spot where inserting Kaepernick back into the starting lineup makes the most sense. But you know, the 49ers, I think they have to be invested in Gabbert for these first few weeks. Just given how far away it seems like Kaepernick is. And Kelly talked about his weight today, Kaepernick's weight, and the fact that he's not all the way back after having those three surgeries and being unable to lift weights for 6 to 8 months. There's still that fear, I think, that Kelly has, that his playing weight is an issue, and because Kaepernick will probably run even more than Gabbert does, that he's going to take a hit and get hurt. And I think Kelly has it in his mind that ultimately, you know, the money is going to be an issue. And Kelly, it's not going to reflect well on Kelly's job status. Well, he's probably going to be safe this year and probably even next year. But if he goes out and is reckless with Kaepernick and gets him hurt in his first season as coach and forces the 49ers to pay Kaepernick that $14.5 million next year, I don't think that bodes well for Kelly's job status, just because the 49ers are rebuilding, despite whatever Trent Baalke will tell you. And they're going to need all the cap space they have going forward. And they really don't want to be locked down to $14.5 million for Kaepernick next year, particularly if he's not starting and playing at a level that you want a quarterback making that much money to be at. So that's going to be something interesting going forward. And I'm curious to see how that plays out.
So let's go ahead and look ahead to next week before we get to Matt Maiocco here. The Seahawks, 49ers have not had a ton of success there over the last couple years, but Seattle's struggling. They're 1-1. They've scored one touchdown this season. They just lost to the Rams down in L.A. They scored 3 points. What are we thinking for next week?
I think the Seahawks have to look at this as an opportunity to get right. I think they've dominated the 49ers, particularly up in Seattle in recent seasons, and the defense has to be confident the way they've been going. They allowed 283 yards to the Rams in that loss Sunday, and then they allowed 214 yards to the Dolphins in their week one win that they barely eked out with that late touchdown. So I would say the Seahawks really have to be licking their chops at a chance to play a team that they shouldn't have any problem getting emotionally up for. And if you're on that defense, you have to be excited about going against Blaine Gabbert. But I will say that there's been little to be impressed by from Seattle's offensive line and their running game. They had 67 rushing yards against the Rams, which is obviously not an impressive total. And if the 49ers, you know, take to heart the film from that Carolina game, they're going to come out and really try to stop the run. So overall, I think this, it's going to be a low scoring game, much more low scoring than Sunday in Carolina. And I don't know how you could do anything else but give the edge to Seattle.
Not that football math ever really works, but I think with the 49ers able to thunder the Rams pretty well, and then the Rams able to pretty much stifle the Seahawks, I think the 49ers are going to go into Seattle and they're going to finally get one. And I think it's going to happen.
Wow.
It's going to be like a microcosm of what you saw from the Panthers and like capitalizing off of turnovers and mistakes because of Seattle's offense. Seattle's offense right now is worse than the 49ers. And with that terrible offensive line, I think this is going to be a bright shining point for guys like Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. And I think they're going to have a lot of success in getting after the quarterback. You know, I've been saying it for a while now. This might be the game that gets Russell Wilson hurt in the fact that that offensive line is just so bad. And the 49ers have enough guys on that defensive line that are capable of getting pressure. And I think really low scoring, you know, maybe like 13-10, somewhere along those lines. But I think this might be the one the 49ers finally pull out in Seattle.
Wow.
That's bold.
Do not go to Seattle, Rob. Do not.
I love that.
Stay out of Seattle over these next 6 days.
I had no intentions of going there. I've got things to do here, so I'll be tuning in.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to disagree with Rob.
Of course you will.
On the fact, yeah, because it wouldn't be good radio if I just agreed with you all the time. No, I think the 49ers go in. I think they play really well. I think they play better than they have in Seattle over the past couple of seasons, really since the 2014 NFC Championship game. I agree with you that, or I agree with Rob that they'll get after Russell Wilson, especially if he's still gimpy on one of those legs or on his bum ankle. I think the 49ers will get home. The pass rush will, but I think Seattle is just too good defensively. I don't see how the 49ers are going to be able to score at all. And if they turn the ball over, I think Seattle will be able to take advantage enough times that they wind up winning this game. But I do agree with the low score, 12-6 type of thing. So those are our predictions. Vince, who's out on assignment, says that there's going to be less than three touchdowns combined in this one. And he also thinks the Seahawks win. So Rob, we got you a 3-1. So if the 49ers go in and win, you've got bragging rights next week.
You don't have to put that on me. I'm confident they'll get it done.
I love it. Anyways, coming up next, we're going to have our guest, Matt Maiocco. He's going to come on. We'll talk a little bit about the similarities between this year and last year, a little bit about Colin Kaepernick, as well as some of the big picture stuff for 2016. That's coming up next.
And with us now on the Niners Wire podcast is the one, the only, Matt Maiocco of CSN Bay Area, fresh off the plane from Charlotte, North Carolina. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just fantastic. How was Charlotte?
Charlotte was good. Yeah, you know, when the years go by now, but my first year on the beat was the Panthers' first season, and that first year they played in at Clemson. And so then the next year they moved to their stadium in Charlotte. And so I was going there pretty much every year. And that city is really, it used to be that downtown, there was nothing there. Now there's a lot of great restaurants and it's pretty good downtown now. So first time I've been back, obviously, since the divisional playoff game a couple of years ago. But from where it was 20 years ago to now, it's completely different.
Well, and back then the Niners used to, the Panthers were in the Niners division, right?
Yes, right. So they played, the Carolina Panthers were in the NFC West. And, of course, the Falcons were in the West. And so, it really didn't make much sense. And then when the divisions realigned, Charlotte was out. And honestly, I didn't shed too many tears because it used to be, it was very difficult to get to Charlotte. Be pretty much a whole day of travel with a connection and all that. And so now it's slowly becoming the West again. Well, quickly becoming the West because now no more St. Louis and it's L.A. instead.
Yeah, it actually makes sense and good for us. We have a divisional game that's an hour flight away, which is unique now. But the 49ers have played two very different games to open the season, and this year is actually playing out kind of a lot like last year did, and we talked about that going into this weekend's game against the Panthers, how the 49ers had the short week playing against the team that played on the Thursday night opener and ended up losing. And this year that was the Panthers, and the 49ers got blown out, although it was a much different kind of blowout. This one was a little bit more competitive, particularly in the second half. But I'm wondering what your impressions of this team are, and if you see, if you've been able to see any marked improvement in a year's time. Obviously, Chip Kelly seems like a more competent coach from Jim Tomsula, but right now the 49ers are in the exact same spot as they were last year.
Exactly. And I don't know that you can really look at it and say that through two games this year and two games last year that there's any difference. You know, the defense looked outstanding and flew around to the ball one game each, you know, the opener of each season. And then the next game was, you know, if not a disaster, darn near. I mean, I think that the defense at times played well, especially in the first quarter. I think they helped get the Panthers had like 36 yards of total offense or something crazy after one quarter. But then, you know, just kind of that talent that the Panthers have, the playmakers they have, the 49ers really don't have any answer to. I mean, they took off. And in the third quarter, you know, the game was a blowout. And then somehow, you know, the Panthers kind of let them back into it by pretty much handing the 49ers a couple of short fields, and including a one-yard touchdown drive, which you don't see too often. And kind of, you know, to everybody's surprise, all of a sudden it's a seven-point game, middle of the fourth quarter, and then the Panthers, it was almost like the Panthers are like, oh, man, what did we do that for? Let's just, you know, put our foot back on the accelerator. So, I don't know. I'm going to be honest, and you can't say the offense looks any better through two games. And I'm not sure you can say the defense looks any better after two games. Now, I think that the bulk of the team is better, but they still don't have the most important positions on either side of the ball. And when you look at defensively, they don't have anybody that they can just turn loose and go get the quarterback. And offensively, they're struggling with Blaine Gabbert, you know, not really moving the team and being a consistent playmaking quarterback. You know, they don't have any threats on the outside. I mean, Torrey Smith is a deep threat, but that's all he does. You know, he's not a move the chains. You know, who's Blaine Gabbert going to look for on third downs? You know, it's not Torrey Smith, and they don't have a guy on the other side who really does that. And you know, Jeremy Curley's been fine, but I mean, he wasn't going to make the team with the Detroit Lions. So, I mean, they just have a dearth of playmakers right now. And Carlos Hyde didn't have a good game. You know, he really changed the momentum with that fumble. And then he was kind of on himself for some of the decisions he was making and his lack of patience hitting the hole. So I think just kind of, I remember last year after two games thinking, well, I think they're going to be better than they just were against Pittsburgh, but I'm not sure. And that's kind of the way I'm feeling right now too, is that I think they're better than, you know, going on the road and losing by 19 points, granted to a very good team, but I think we'll see, because right now there are a lot of questions people are asking about the Seattle Seahawks still.
Now, Matt, this is Rob here. Another question for you.
Hey, Rob.
Blaine Gabbert, I mean, you just mentioned him, seems to be kind of walking around with an hourglass kind of just right over his head. And I think every time he plays bad, that sand seems to move a little bit quicker. How long do you think Blaine Gabbert can hold on to that starting job?
Well, I would think, you know, unless he comes out and throws, you know, four picks against Seattle. I mean, if he kind of plays how he's been playing, I still think that they would probably stick with him through the Arizona game. They're not going to make the change this week. And then what do you have the next week would be
Dallas,
right? And then the short week against Arizona. So I would think that if he hasn't shown improvement, if he's not more accurate, if that offense isn't moving better, and you can clearly trace it back to the quarterback not doing his share of the heavy lifting, then I think really the first time that you would say, you know what, maybe the switch should be made would be after the short week against Arizona leading into a long week. And I think that that serves two purposes, is that, you know, I still think that, that the guys, you know, the locker room prefer Gilbert. But if he just, you know, so you got to give him a little bit of a long leash. And after all, he's the guy that, in the mind of Chip Kelly, won the starting job through the offseason program and through training camp. So you can't just, you know, have a quick trigger with him and just say, okay, two games, you know, you're ranked near the bottom of the league in pretty much every statistical category, you're out. So I think they need to show a little bit of patience there. And at the same time, you know, and I know Chip talked about this today, and he has talked about it for several weeks, is that, you know, Kaepernick is not strength-wise and weight-wise, he's not where he was before he exited the lineup last year. You know, he's not at the same weight and strength that he was at when he was playing good football at the beginning of his career. So, you know, you'd want to, if you're going to make the move, you'd want to do it for two reasons. One being that Gilbert isn't the answer, and that Kaepernick is now in a position to succeed by being stronger, having a better grasp of the offense. I know he's only getting about a quarter of the reps in practice, but you know, he's still working on his game, and he's trying to keep himself in a position where, when called upon, he can go in and play. So that's what I would say. I would say it wouldn't be until the game after that Arizona game, because I think if you put Kaepernick in before that, you're kind of setting him up to fail too.
Yeah, and one of the real interesting subplots or tentacles of this Kaepernick story is the money that he's due next year. And that's tied into, you know, perhaps Trent Baalke's future. And Kaepernick being underweight, you would think would scare the front office, given the fact that they might be on the hook to pay him next spring if he gets hurt similarly to last season when he had those three surgeries. So, it looks like there's clouds on the forecast. Just between Chip Kelly saying that Colin Kaepernick is one of the best two quarterbacks on the roster, and Kaepernick still being up, being Gabbert's clear number two backup for now, and the fact that he's underweight and that would potentially lead to more injuries. So, you know, with all that, it would seem like there's a bunch of conflict brewing on the horizon, whether it be between Chip Kelly. We already know that, you know, Kaepernick and Trent Baalke don't see eye to eye. But given all that,
what? Hold on, what now?
you might be onto something. Given all that, how do you see the rest of the season playing out for Kaepernick and the new coaching staff and Trent Baalke?
You know, I mean, it's tough. It's difficult to say because Trent Baalke has contractual power over the 53-man roster. And I haven't spoken to him specifically about this, but I know in speaking with him in the past about certain decisions, he tends to lean toward what the head coach wants. And his belief has always been, you know, you can't force a player down the head coach's throat. And at the same time, if a head coach really wants a guy, you know, you got to kind of go with what the head coach wants. So Trent Baalke has power over the 53-man. But now, you know, once the season has started and you have your 53-man, I mean, I guess you could cut Kaepernick, but the head coach has contractual power over the 46-man. So as your listeners, I'm sure, know, 53 guys on the active roster, but only 46 of them suit up for games. And Chip Kelly has determined that Colin Kaepernick, he'd rather have him, you know, lower weight and less strength and all over Christian Ponder as the number two quarterback. So, you know, with you have to realize that Chip and Baalke want the same things. I mean, they want to win games now, but they also want to set themselves up for the future. I mean, I don't think Trent Baalke's going into this going, you know, this is my final year as a GM, otherwise, you know, he wouldn't have made some trades to get future draft picks. So he's thinking of it like you're still building for the future. And part of that is, at what point do you pull the plug on Kaepernick and say that the odds now of him sustaining an injury that could stretch into April and make his $14.5 million salary for next year fully guaranteed, at what point does the upside, or I should say the risk outweigh the you know, the potential for success with that? Because, you know, if you have $14.5 million eating away at your cap for next year on a quarterback who isn't even your number one, it really handcuffs you what you can do for the future. Now, I know there's plenty of money under the cap, and I can't see them really pushing up against the cap next year, but they do have guys that I'm sure they want to wrap up to long-term deals in this offseason. Eric Reed could be one of them. You know, he's on the books right now for that fifth-year option, but I think they'd want to have something long-term done with him. You know, you have Carlos Hyde, you have Jimmy Ward, you have some other guys that show a lot of promise and they want to keep around, and I just don't think that at some point you can't take that risk unless Kaepernick gets in there and starts playing really good football, and then you think, you know, maybe he is the future quarterback. That's kind of a far-fetched right now as you look at where his career trajectory has gone. But I mean, those are all things that I think Chip Kelly and Trent Baalke have to work hand-in-hand to determine the answers of how this team wants to move forward.
And if Kaepernick is made inactive, say they just, you know, put it out there, Christian Ponder's the new backup and Kaepernick's not active, well, what do you think that does for the team in terms of a distraction standpoint, public blowback, how Kaepernick handles the locker room and all that stuff? Because as soon as that happens, that becomes the biggest story on the team, yeah. And it's not even related to what's going on between the lines.
Yeah, no, I think that the way they would have to spin it would be just that we can't take the future, we can't take the risk of you know, hurting ourselves in the future. And, you know, they could say all the right things, is that, you know, we really enjoyed the season with Kaepernick. You know, the organization could say, hey, look, we supported him with his protest. We even supported it financially by donating $1 million out of the 49ers Foundation to causes that are consistent with what he's protesting and what he's saying. But in at the end of the day, this is a football organization, and you have to make business decisions. Some of them are tough. Some of them are easy. And, you know, there are good players every year. There are really good players who are let go by their teams because of salary cap reasons. I mean, there are, you know, in NFL contracts, there are, you know, players can be released for, you know, skill, or you see contracts guaranteed for skill, injury, and cap. And so this would be a cap move. This wouldn't be a CAP, salary cap move. This wouldn't be, you know, hey, this is a power struggle between Chip and Trent. It would have to be something where I think Chip is involved in this and understands ramifications. And I'm sure he would, because, you know, he made several of these types of moves, unpopular moves, while he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. So he knows the NFL landscape and what you have to do sometimes to set yourself up for the future.
Trent Baalke's definitely made some less than popular moves throughout his tenure. I mean, his popular trend of drafting ACL picks hasn't exactly worked out, and there's been a few other things here and there. Sort of a two-part question. I mean, describe Trent Baalke's job status, and how many wins, or I guess you could say successes, does he need to have to be retained beyond 2016?
I don't think there's a win total that you could look at and say he has to win, or the 49ers have to win this. But, you know, here would be the dilemma for Jed York and, you know, Parag Marate, I'm sure, will be involved in any kinds of decisions as well. The dilemma is, if a lot of these young players have really good years, you know, guys like Armstead and Buckner and Trent Brown and Carlos Hyde and Jimmy Ward and on and on and on. A lot of those guys can have good years and play good football, and the team still might not win. And the reason is because those guys don't necessarily play. I mean, you got to have players at those positions that I just mentioned to win, but they don't necessarily play huge impact positions. You know, the huge impact positions are, you know, outside linebacker for the 49ers, you know, somebody who can get you 12, 15 sacks a season, and a quarterback. And kind of hand in hand with that, wide receivers. You have to be able to win the passing games on both sides of the ball. And so the 49ers, you know, could be looking at a position or a situation where they have a lot of really good young players that Trent Baalke has added over the past 3 or 4 years, but it doesn't necessarily reflect on the win-loss record. So then the question becomes, well, he's built a really good team except for these three positions. So do you then trust him to say, hey, you know, you wanted to build up the secondary. It looks like you've done that. The offensive line was a struggle last year. It looks like you fixed that. Now, do we give you the time to go out and make a decision on who the quarterback for 2017 and beyond is? Can we trust you to go out and use a couple picks to bulk up the wide receiver position? So that would be the question that Jed York ultimately will have to ask himself. Is it, you know, you've trusted this guy to build up other spots, and a lot of those players appear to be pretty good players that you can win a lot of football games with, but now do you say, okay, now the goal is to get positions, you know, to strengthen these positions that are really impact positions? So that's why I think it's such a difficult call, and I don't think you can say, well, if they win, you know, five games or less, he's out, and if they win, you know, nine games or more, he stays, and if they win somewhere there in the middle, it's a coin flip. I just don't think you can do that, because he's shown that he can build a roster that's deep at certain positions, but other positions leave a lot to be desired.
Matt, the 49ers have always been fascinating, no matter how good or bad they've been the last few years, and your coverage has always been fascinating to follow. So we appreciate you coming on our podcast, and we'll let you get some rest, because I know you've been traveling a lot these last few days.
All right. Well, Chris, Rob, thanks for having me on, and maybe we'll have to do it again sometime before the end of the year.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it's our time. We got to get out of here, everybody. Be sure to stay locked to NinersWire.com for all the latest 49ers news and notes. You can also find us on Twitter at The Niners Wire and on Facebook. That's also at Niners Wire. Be sure to check out the Niners Wire podcast every Tuesday. For Chris Biederman, Vince Fasoni, and Rob Lauder, I'm Kyle Madsen. Thanks so much for listening.